The committee will come to order. Everyone has taken their seats. Very good. Thank you. Don't have a quorum quite yet, so we'll... now we do. This is amazing. I just said, where's Representative McNamara? He appears. I say, I need a quorum. In comes Representative Cornish. Continuing, we will now approve the minutes of the date of February 15th. All right. Representative Green, do you move those, please?
I move that, those minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are passed. Thank you. Our schedule today, what we plan on doing, is an informal discussion of the, or informational discussion, not informal, of Bill 471, House File 471. And again, an informal discussion. The bill will be presented by Representative McNamara, and he will have testifiers. Members are welcome to ask questions. As long as it takes today, it will be, depending on members' questions, also open to the audience today. It will also then run over into next Tuesday, where we will also accept questions if we're not done today, or comments if they're not done today. And we will also on Tuesday then have amendments. And hopefully then the plan is Tuesday to vote the bill out here. So with that, will we lay the correct procedure we're going to follow is to lay the bill over on Tuesday, and then when we have the other components of the bill, the four categories, compile the omnibus bill and send it to the Environment Committee. Apparently, this is what we have today. It is the full bill. All right. So with that, welcome to your committee, Representative McNamara.
Well, your committee, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad to be here and to talk about House File 471 today, and look forward to moving the bill on Tuesday when we'll actually entertain the bill formally and hopefully be able to move it from this division on to the full Environment Committee. With me, Mr. Chair and members today, is Mr. Bill Becker, who's the Executive Director for the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, which for those folks is the one-third of the three-eighths. It's one-eighth, I should say, or one-eighth of 1%, one-third of the three-eighths sales tax money that was passed in 2008. This appropriation is $86,471,000 of approximately 96 available this year in this year for that money. Approximately $10 million is not being spent, of which of about approximately $5 million it's been recommended by MMV to be set aside for cash flow purposes. Mr. Chair and members, I think what I'll do is turn it over to Mr. Becker, who will be able to go through the bill and its different sections and items, and I guess we would entertain questions along the way that might make the most sense as people see it, and unless it's something different that either you or Mr. Becker think it would be better to go through, and I guess I would defer to both of you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative McNamara. Mr. Becker, is that...
That's great, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, as members, if you have a question that pertains to the topic or the project or whatever that is currently being talked about, or... you know, relative to what Mr. Becker is referring to. So begin.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Bill Becker, Executive Director of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Behind me are my staff, Sandy Smith and Heather Koo. I'd like to first overview the bill and then go through the bill in detail. So we have a PowerPoint here that has some overarching representations of the bill. The Outdoor Heritage Fund, according to the Minnesota Constitution, may only be spent to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. It must supplement traditional sources and may not be used as a substitute. The council received 44 requests, totaling $202 million. This was in response to the call for requests, which you should have in your packet. It looks something like this and has priorities for each part of Minnesota in the back of it that the respondents were to respond to. The council heard 30 presentations out of the 44, averaging 30 minutes each. Council recommendations to date. The council has beginning to see patterns in the requests. There are more programs receiving dollars as the years have gone by. There's more money to conservation partner grants. And as of 12/31/10, the spending in the Minnesota laws of 2009 was 67% expended and over 90% committed. And the laws of Minnesota has been 12% expended with more legally committed. Programs receiving the funds. In House File 471, there are 12 non-governmental organization programs, 4 local regional government programs, and 11 state government programs.
Excuse me, Mr. Becker. Apparently we didn't receive the one that says Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council call for funding request. So we just have one copy. We'll make, if members, am I correct, do you have this? We will make copies. We'll have the pages make copies and get them to you shortly.
Our apologies.
Okay. Continue, please.
Measures of impact today. We've protected over 28,000 acres in fee and 250,000 acres through easement. House File 471 protects 10,000 acres in fee and 45,000 acres in easement. The restoration in House File 471 is 850 acres, and enhancement is 40,406 acres. I might add that we've had some problems classifying projects as restoration versus enhancement, and you can see the shift in the way the classification has gone over time by the statistics. In this particular bill, there are 55,000 acres that are protected, 40,000 acres.
Mr. Becker, please, Representative Wagenius.
Could you like questions now, Mr. Chair, if he runs over with that portion, like later?
If it's pertinent to what he's talking about at that time, it would be proper to do it now. Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker.
Yeah. Microphone, please. Oh,
thank you. All these processes here. Enhance is more than restore. Help me out here. I don't know what an enhancement would be for a prairie forest or wetland. Help us out here.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure that I can fully answer the question. I'm not sure that I have the knowledge. I will say that we noticed a change in classification of projects after the last bill passed and the evaluation panels were put in place, which call for evaluation of restorations. And so we began to see more things described as enhancements at that time.
Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is extremely troubling. Because as we were looking at restorations and people saying we don't want them to be evaluated, and getting that message, then that raises the question of why. Generally speaking, when people have done good work, they say, come look, come see. And they want to be recognized as having done good work. So if this is a way to skate around being evaluated, when the statute specifically says we shall have outcomes that are measurable, that you measure them, and then they are evaluated. That is the statutory, underlying statutory framework for all the funds. So I think, members, we need to figure out what's going on here. But if I could still have the floor?
You still have it.
Thank you. Well, because I'm going to divert to a second question.
Unless you want him to answer your first question first.
Well, I think he was having trouble doing it. I mean, not...
Would you care to respond, Mr. Becker? Or do you want to wait till she's done?
Representative Bogenius, I agree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bogenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other thing I would just observe for members, and maybe we can figure out why this is happening too, when you started off and you said there were like 44 requests for $98 million, or what is my, did I get that right?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker?
$86 million.
$202
million. $202
million
and 44 requests. So I was in the past privileged to be a member of the LCCMR, where we only had generally $25 million and one time had $50 million. And we had many, many more requests for that money, which is just a small portion of this money. So I don't get that either.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bogenius, one of the things that the Council has tried to do is to be specific in its priorities, and I think that that's narrowed down the interest because of the specificity of the priorities. I think if you broaden the priorities, you would see more responses or requests.
Representative Bogenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, the LCCMR narrowed its requests and has done that religiously, not having a broad open request, but having certain priorities. So that may be a partial explanation, but it doesn't... It's curious. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Continue, Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, as you can be seen by the slide in front of you, there's a pretty fair balance of 55,000 protect, 40,000 enhance and restore, 41,000 enhance and restore acres. I think I want to remind you that the council does seek to provide a balance in the recommendations that they make. Another way to look at the activity is by acres, and restore is 1%, fee acquisition is 11%, easements 47%, and enhancements 41%. One of the issues that the council tries to address is that of payment in lieu of taxes. As we go through the bill, we'll get more specific about where this payment in lieu of tax obligation is created. But in House File 71, 471, 11% of the fee of the acreage which is acquired in fee creates a PILT liability. So not all acquired acres create PILT. Not all fee acquired acres create PILT. The sum total can be seen at the bottom of the chart, $194,596 in PILT liability. That's an ongoing liability each year and every year. And the liabilities are cumulative, so that it looks like right now we have about, on the first three recommendations, we've created about $450,000 in PILT liability. And the projects are well distributed, located in 75 of the 87 counties. I might add that the more northern projects are primarily easements or restore and enhance projects. The acquisition is concentrated in the south and west part of the state. Funding by section, most of the investment is in the prairie and northern forest area of the state. Prairies are a priority. There's less than 1% remaining of the original prairie. And stemming forest fragmentation is also a priority. We found that there's always curiosity about the allocation to the metropolitan urban area. You can see that we're allocating in this particular bill $7,802,000. Just want to remind members of the committee that the metro area is 5% of the publicly held, or excuse me, of public and privately held habitat in Minnesota, and 60% of that 5% is protected already. So there's less opportunity in the metro area for protection through and for restoration and enhancement.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, if I remember correctly from last year and some of our discussions of this, while proportionately the metro area might not have as much as some other place, if I remember correctly, DNR said that there was 274,000 acres of quality habitat of various kinds in the metro area. So it would almost seem the opposite, that these should be protected because it's relatively small, but that's still a fair amount of acreage.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Genius, I think it can be looked at both ways. Remembering that as far as acquisition is concerned, we're dealing with willing sellers. That's an issue. And as far as protection and enhancement is concerned, there's a fair amount of opportunity in the metropolitan area for doing that. And I think as we go through the bill, you'll see some of that come out. We can also look at the dollars recommended by biome, constitutional biome. The majority of the money, again, is being recommended for the prairie biome. The forest biome is the next most recommended constitutionally protected.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I have so many questions, but this is a lot of money, and we do need to ask questions. With this prairie biome that you are talking about, this $25 million and this $39 million, in the DNR long-range plan, it said that, which is all good reading, it said that we have 220,000 acres of native prairie that has never been turned, and nearly 105,000 of those acres are unprotected. How much of the actual native prairie are you protecting with this money?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, take me a second to flip through the bill to find the accomplishments that are relative to that particular question. But in item 2A, and I'm sorry we didn't break it out by biome in the bill. We'll have to get back to you on that question. We can provide that information.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So what does this all mean in a nutshell? Most of the proposals, 19 out of 27, are continuations of previously recommended programs. This reflects the philosophy of the Council of identifying objectives and funding programs aimed at those objectives year after year after year in the hope of creating a palpable, noticeable set of achievements. Enhancement activities remain strong, especially forest enhancement, prairie restoration, shallow lakes take a leading role. And over half of the recommended funds and activities are in the prairie forest area transition and the prairie area. We ran the recommendations through the state input-output model to see how this bill affects Minnesota's economy. There are 36 jobs created directly supported by the spending of the programs themselves. 19 are in state and 16 are in non-governmental organizations, approximately a 50-50 split between public and private. In the first year of the appropriation, 337 secondary jobs will be created, and in the second year, 259 jobs will be created. These are in addition to the 36 I mentioned earlier. And the total four-year...
Mr. Becker, please, would you be more specific in the in defining what secondary jobs are?
The first round of spending creates 36 jobs. That spending then creates 337 secondary jobs in the first year and 259 secondary jobs in the second year because the spending is spread out over years. And Representative McNamara would like for me to provide examples of secondary jobs, and it might be attorneys, it might be landscapers, it might be real estate people, it could be people who are supporting the travel of folks who are out doing work in the field.
Okay, thank you. Representative Green?
That was exactly my question.
Continue.
The administrative budget, $471,000 in the first year and $471,000 in the second year is requested. There are three full-time staff positions. These are to attract approximately $230 million in appropriations in over 75 programs and to facilitate the council recommendation of making close to 25 awards per year, and as well as paying expenses related to council meetings. We meet approximately 19 times per year. The appropriation in FY 2012 allows for a 1% administrative budget according to statute. That would mean that we could have as much as $860,000, which would be 1%. Instead, we've got $471,000, or one half of 1%, is our request. And this is reduced from $600,000 as appropriated in laws of Minnesota 2010. So, with that, I'd like to go through the major sections of the bill. You have in your packet what we refer to as an annotated bill. These are my notes. I'll go through them. You can have my notes, and I think it'll facilitate questioning as we go forward. The bill appropriates in Section 2, Subdivision 1, $86,471,000 in fiscal year 12, and another $471,000 in fiscal year 13. The first subdivision is for prairies. We've classified the appropriations in the bill generally by the constitutional biomes. We recommend appropriation of $32,671,000 to the prairie section, with the first appropriation being item 2A, wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and prairie bank easement acquisition. This is phase three, so this is the third appropriation we've recommended to these programs. $3,931,000 is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire land and fee for wildlife management area purposes, scientific and natural area purposes, and acquire native prairie bank under easements. The fee acquisition will be 1,186 acres. Easement is 150 acres. And the payment in lieu of taxes liability is $24,037. The original request was for $26,614,000.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker. DNR keeps a running list of acquisitions that it would like to hold, having identified very specific parcels because they clearly believe that these would be good parcels for Minnesotans to own. In the scientific and natural area, that is the longest list of projects that haven't been purchased. I think it, the last time I looked, it was $68 million of land that had been identified as scientific and natural area that had high biological diversity or rare plants or something, a fen perhaps, that had been identified by DNR. So I'm surprised to see such a small amount relative to everything else we are doing, because the lists of other properties, I think the other longest list is like $10 million, if I remember correctly. So help me understand why this money isn't being used for the most outstanding stuff we have.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, the recommendation is to a program that includes the wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and AMA. The Department of Natural Resources reviews their lists and puts them in priority order and supplies them to us. In that priority order were three SNAs. The Eglin Ecotone for 160 acres, Watrous Island for 70 acres, and Savage Fen for 98 acres. This is on top of four that we've acquired in prior years. So the answer to your question is it's at the choice of the Department of Natural Resources to do the priority between lists and come up with one comprehensive list. When they did it, that's what they came up with, is the three that I just mentioned.
Representative Wagenius?
Well, that may have been the three priorities that they would like to have, but their whole list is an identified list of outstanding natural resources because they're either a fen or they have high biological diversity or they're rare and endangered species. So my question still remains, why did we not use some of this money to purchase more of these SNAs, potential SNAs?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker.
The department works on the basis of willing sellers. These were the prime willing sellers.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may have been the prime. I am looking at, did we ask anybody else on that list if they were willing sellers?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, the council did not ask. The department, I'm sure, asked them.
Well, I think maybe that's something we need to understand better. If we have this list, and it's the longest list, and we've been holding that list for a while, and I would even say that we had had, and I can't remember the number, but I think we'd had something like $4 million in the last bonding bill that the governor line item vetoed. So it seems to me, just on that basis, that there would have been more opportunities here.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker?
There's $1.5 million approximately in this particular bill for those SNAs.
$1.5 million
for
those SNAs out of 68 million.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Phoenix, have 86 million.
86?
That's the bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Excuse me. I was saying $1.5 million out of the list that the DNR holds, which is, if I remember correctly, and I may not remember correctly, is about $68 million.
Mr. Chair.
Continue.
2B, accelerated prairie restoration and enhancement on DNR lands. That's $1,652,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to enhance 20,400 acres of prairie on DNR lands. The original quote request was $4,082,000. The project addresses LSOHC priorities of all sections to restore enhanced prairie on WMAs, SNAs, Native Prairie Bank, and easements. Item 2C, Minnesota buffers for wildlife and water, is $2,249,000 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources in cooperation with Pheasants Forever to acquire permanent conservation easements to enhance habitat by expanding riparian wildlife buffers on private land. This is a an innovative program that extends the water quality buffers with Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars. So the silt liability is zero. They intend to protect 1,156 acres. The anticipated leverage on this is $2 million from the USDA CRP, and it addresses Lassard Sam's priorities on prairie. Number one, protect existing wetland upland complexes, and five, enhance shallow lakes, and six, protect expiring CRP lands. 2D, Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge land acquisition, phase three. $1,720,000 is to the Nature Conservancy to acquire land or permanent easements within the Northern Tallgrass Prairie Preservation Area in western Minnesota. They will protect and fee 735 acres and an easement of another 735 acres. There's no silt liability on this particular project. The anticipated leverage is $7,387, addressing LSOHC priorities. Prairie number one, protect existing wetland upland complexes. And number two, protect remnant prairies, big woods, forest, oak, savanna. Item 2E is Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, phase two. This is the second appropriation to the Nature Conservancy. This one's at $4,500,000 to protect and manage native prairie and savanna. The silt liability is zero. They intend to restore 250 acres and protect and fee 1,200 acres and enhance 6,000 acres. The leverage is $1,613,000 and change from the Nature Conservancy, the Environmental Trust Fund, and North American Wetland Conservation Act. This one addresses council priorities, prairie number one, to protect existing wetland upland complexes, and two, to protect remnant native prairie. Number seven, to protect migratory habitat for waterfowl to increase migratory breeding success. Item 2F, the Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex. This is a new program in phase one. This is our phase one appropriation. $1,533,000 is to the Trust for Public Land to acquire and restore lands in the Cannon River watershed for wildlife management area purposes. They intend to protect 510 acres in fee. It'll create a silt liability of $12,975. And it addresses LSOHC priorities one, protect existing wetland and upland complexes, two, protect remnant native prairie big woods forests, and seven, protect migratory habitat. Item 2G, accelerating
Ms. Becker, Representative Green has a question.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Becker. I wanted to ask, I've read in this long-range plan from the DNR about that one-third of all lands acquired for WMA were previously farmland. And I know we've heard in this committee, and I honestly, I'm sorry, I don't remember the testifier who talked about how hard it is to convert farmland back to prairie, that basically there's just no way to really get back there, and, you know, without hundreds of years. So I just wondered about that statistic, the one-third.
Mr. Becker.
Chair. I'm not familiar with that statistic, Representative Green, and we can check with the department on it and get an answer back to you, if you don't mind.
Kind of relatedly, I noticed that the...
No, Green.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. That the LSOHC's number one priority, prairie number one, protect existing wetland upland complexes, and then the second phrase, or convert ag lands to new wetland upland habitat complexes. I guess Is it part of that?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, I think that that one-third would be included in that priority. The idea is there are marginal ag lands that have been tapped, so to speak, that are situated in such a fashion as to be extraordinarily valuable for habitat. They may be adjacent to other habitat, for example. And that would be the type of ag land that you would convert back. Not prime ag land out in the middle of the prairie, so to speak, the once prairie. So I think that that's the intent of that particular priority. Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker?
Shall I continue?
Continue.
Item 2G is excelling the Wildlife Management Area Program, Phase 3. This is our third appropriation. It's $5,550,000. To the Pheasants Forever to acquire prairie and other habitat areas for wildlife management purposes. The outcomes are acquisition of 1,275 acres and a pilt liability of 41,213 acres. The anticipated leverage from PF funds is $607,000. This meets Council Priority 1. And in the prairie area, 2, protecting remnant native prairies, 5, restore and enhance shallow lakes, 6, protecting expiring CRP lands, and 7, protecting migratory habitat. Item 2H, accelerating the water.
Excuse me, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. This is a good time, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, to bring up a question that people keep asking me, and I don't know the answer to. We have a 1% set aside for administrative costs for the council. How much other administrative costs are involved here? I mean, and this would be a just, I mean, we could ask it about any one of them. How much of this money, is it a percentage? Is it a flat dollar that will go to administrative costs? And what kinds of administrative costs are we paying for?
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius. We only reimburse expenditures that are direct to and necessary for the appropriated program. And the indirect overhead are not paid. So if that's what you mean by administrative costs, the answer is zero. If you're talking about commissioner's office, personnel, things of that sort, the answer is zero. We only pay for the services direct to and necessary for the program. We do pay human resources fees. They process the payroll. It's necessary to pay people.
No, I think
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. No, I think I didn't speak very well. You're talking about the 1%. That's set aside for your administration. I'm not questioning that. What I am asking is how much money is set aside, how much money of whatever one, I don't know who's getting the money you just talked about, but it's a lot of money. How much of that goes to administrative costs and what are the rules of the game?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, I don't believe any of it goes to administrative costs.
None of it.
I don't believe so. It's all direct to and necessary for.
So would you say that would be true of each of the programs here?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Yes. And I might add that we inspect the budgets. There are personnel in the budget. There's no doubt about that, but they're personnel that are working on the project, not administrative personnel.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Becker, for people working on the projects, do we have a cap of how much of the money is used for that versus the actual cost of the land, the purchasing of seeds, the burn?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker.
Representative Bocanius, by a cap you mean no more than 10% can be spent and that sort of thing? No. We have a certain amount, a known amount, that each individual program manager completes. The total personnel appears to be, in terms of the request, about 6%, 7%, just judging from the sheet here. But we have it broken out for each program in actual amount, number of FTEs, things of that sort.
So if I could have a final question.
Representative Wiginius.
So would you say on average 6% is a good representation of the cost that we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, notwithstanding the lack of definition of administrative costs, I think that if we're talking in this general field about personnel working on projects, yeah, that's a pretty fair.
Thank you.
Pretty fair number.
Continue, Mr. Becker.
2H, accelerating the waterfowl production area program, phase three is the Pheasants Forever, $9,815,000 to accelerate the acquisition of wetlands and grassland to be added to the waterfowl production area system in Minnesota. They will acquire 2,250 acres with a tilt liability to the state of zero. The anticipated leverage is $5,125,000 from PF and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. 2I, the Green Corridor Legacy Program, Phase 3, is $1,771,000. The Redwood Area Development Corporation to acquire land for wildlife management area purposes. It will restore 275 acres, protect and fee 275 acres, create an ongoing state tilt liability of $11,381.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is a lot of questions, but this is a lot of money, too. So I'm looking at this on page 9 that you're accelerating the waterfowl production area. Appears that this money is then going, or this land is going to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service with the anticipation that they would be managing it into the future. Am I correct about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, yes, you are.
Mr. Beck. Representative Wiginius.
I think one of the things that has happened is we have assumed, because there's so much talk here about not wanting to pay the management costs, not wanting to pay the pilt costs, that if we shift over into the federal taxpayers, that we're home free. But if we look at the federal budget right now, I don't think there's anybody who can say that the federal government is in better shape than we're in. And in fact, they're in worse shape than we're in. So to have an expectation that the federal government will actually provide the kind of management we need, I don't think is the right expectation. I actually trust Minnesota more than I trust the federal government. Maybe historically they could do it, but how with the deficit could we believe that they will be able to continue to do that in the future?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you raise a great point that we don't know what the federal government is going to do, and I think Mr. Becker's done a good point to list where the pilt liability is zero, but it may not mean that the local units of government are going to be compensated from the federal government permanently. Historically, and to members, if I'm not mistaken, historically the federal government doesn't pay quite as much as the state does for pilt, but we do not assume there's state liability. We assume the federal government's going to pay it, and you make a good point that where we talk our own pilt payments, how much can we depend on them in the future? Maybe we can depend on the federal government even less. I think it's a point well made, one that the committee should be aware of.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker?
Representative Wagenius to Representative McNamara's response. I would just like to point out that the land ownership patterns in Minnesota drive in large measure who ought to be the manager of Pacific land. It doesn't make a lot of sense to have a part of Minnesota, say the Wilmer area, where there's a lot of waterfowl production areas established, just all of a sudden start bringing in state land and interspersing that in with federal land. So there are some management economies, but you're right about the position of the federal government's budget vis-a-vis the state. I think that's a good point that needs to be made.
Representative Wagenius?
Just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, is there language in here that if you were to give the lands to the federal government, that if they weren't managed to a certain level or didn't have a certain level percentage-wise of PILT payment, that they would revert back to the state?
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, no, there's language you're familiar with that if they are converted from their intended use, that could cover part of that, but not directly.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if we can have language that says if they go away from their intended use, obviously their intended use is for waterfowl, and if we can't, they can't manage it, or they don't pay the PILT payment, then maybe we should be considering having that revert to the state.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, where in the federal budget does the money come from to maintain these lands to the specification that we've have an expectation for? Does that come from, in the instance of migratory type lands, migratory bird lands, does that come from duck stamps, or where does it come from, the farm bill, or where does that money come from, and how vulnerable do you feel that it is in future years?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gill, it comes through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Department of Interior. It's, I'm sure, made up of a blend of stamp money and other sorts of accounts. Pittman Robertson? Yeah, Dingell Johnson. Those are the antiquated terms, which only goes to show you how long I've been in this field. But that would be where the money would come from.
So, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Dill?
Well, not that that gives me the where I think we need to be. I think Representative Wagenius is on the right track about having some assurances or some reversionary language, but at least it doesn't appear, at least just based on this, that it's general fund type money that's paying for it. It's kind of user pay, actually. And anyway, I have a little concern, like Representative Wagenius does, about the fact that we've given the responsibility to someone else, and we don't have maybe quite clear enough distinction that what happens to if it doesn't happen in accordance the way we believe it should be managed.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I will offer up the wetland that we own for as an example of things aren't working right. Our farm has a easement with U.S. Fish and Wildlife on it. It was purchased with duck stamps, and right now our neighbor who used to have his land in CRP is now draining his cornfields into the wetland. I don't think they're as hospitable to ducks as they once were. So I don't think that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or Minnesotans are getting the value that they thought they were getting. We've never done a thing to that land. And we just, it's there. It's a nice piece of wetland. But what happens when something like that happens? It's not going to be hospitable for ducks anymore. Yet, it's an easement. It's not It's the same issue, and I just don't know how we get around or how we deal with the U.S. government not doing its job, and that's the key.
Mr. Becker?
Subdivision 3 is the forest biome. There's $14,371,000 recommended for that. 3A is Minnesota Forest for the Future Phase 3. This is our third appropriation for this program. This appropriation is $5,409,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for working forest easement and a little bit of fee acquisition under the Minnesota Forest for the Futures program. That's established in statutes in 84.66. Easements are anticipated to be 30,700 acres. The PILT liability is zero. There are no fee acres projected at this point, but we left them the opportunity to do a little fill-in with fee if it was necessary to make make sense. The anticipated leverage is $2,250,000 from the Nature Conservancy and bonding. I want to go back to 2I, the Green Corridor Legacy Program. $1,771,000 to the Redwood Area Development Corporation to acquire land for wildlife management area purposes. Just point that out. I think that we covered it, but I wanted to make sure that you all noticed that one. 3B is...
Representative Cornish has a question.
Not so much a question as a comment. I suppose I could let this pass, but with farmers being in the crowd and other conservationists, I don't like corn country being equated with being harmful on ducks. Representative Wagenius, we have a bio around our farm is just wonderful for ducks. It's our prime hunting spot, and a tile that empties a whole cornfield of drainage drains directly into it, and the ducks populate and breed there, and they feed there. They fly out under the corn to eat. And I don't know if this comes from your opinion of the atrazine versus corn and this and that, but it's been corn in the field there for decades, draining directly the drainage in. So I think we'd have to take it on a case-by-case basis, and corn or beans or runoff or fertilizer or whatever, but ours certainly seems to go well with ducks. So.
Sure, it's case-by-case.
3B is LaSalle Lake. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Protecting critical Mississippi headwaters habitat. This is $4.632 million to the Trust for Public Land to acquire land adjacent to LaSalle Lake in Hubbard County. This is part of a three-part acquisition. 190,000 acres are funded through the Environmental Trust Fund at $2 million. This appropriation funds 433 acres through the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And then there's another 100 acres that's up for sale in this package deal for $1.953 million. The source of those funds is not specified. They will restore 84 acres and protect 433 acres. A PILT liability of $34,000 is created. There's anticipated leverage of that I mentioned earlier of $3,963,000 in other state funds. Number 3C, accelerated forest habitat enhancement, phase 2. This is $826,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to restore and enhance lands in state forests. It will enhance 7,364 acres. The LSOHC priority is northern forest, number one, to protect shoreland, critical habitat, and number two, to protect forest land to prevent parcelization, fragmentation, and forest prairie priority number one to enhance wild rice, wetlands, shallow lakes, and aspen. 3D, Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Habitat Partnership Phase 2. It's $988,000 to Pheasants Forever in cooperation with the Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Society identify and acquire land that has active leks, L-E-K-S, which are sharp-tailed grouse breeding grounds. It's an example of precision acquisition that we talked about earlier to make sure that if you're going to acquire, get the land that's absolutely necessary. And that would be what these sharp-tailed leks are classified as absolutely necessary lands. 3E, the Lower Mississippi River Habitat Partnership, Phase 2, $707,000. The Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire and enhance habitat in the Lower Root and Zumbro River watersheds. They'll acquire 200 acres in fee and create a pilt liability of $4,952 and address Southeast Forest Priority 2 to protect habitat in rivers, cold water streams, and associated upland habitat.
3F. Representative Winkler has a question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to return to 3D, and I am new to this. It's on page 14. It's the sharptail habitat. It's not clear from this, and it may be in other documents, but the who actually owns the land when it's acquired? Is it Pheasants Forever?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, the land will eventually be turned over to the Department of Natural Resources as a wildlife management area.
So,
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, so then this partnership identifies it, and they use the funds to purchase it, and then it is at some point conveyed to the state, essentially.
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, let me take that question in two ways. One is, Pheasants Forever is adept at coming in and acquiring land and supplementing the department's ability to do that. The Ruffed Grouse Society is adept at identifying the priority, the Sharptail Grouse Society is adept at identifying the land that's important for sharptail grouse. The land is listed on the priority list of the Department of Natural Resources, but it's being acquired by Pheasants Forever and is being turned over to the department under the part of the appropriation that reads for wildlife management area purposes under Minnesota statutes 86A.05 subdivision 8, which I think that would point you to the wildlife management area.
Mr.
Representative Winkler.
Chair, Mr. Becker, I'm not familiar with how these things have worked. So what is, if it's on a priority list for the DNR, you said that Pheasants Forever is adept at identifying it or acquiring the land? If it's already on the list, what's the value add that they provide?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Beck.
Representative Winkler. An example of the value they provide is that some people just simply don't want to work with the Department of Natural Resources. They understand the fate of their land, but they'd rather trust the Pheasants Forever organization. The process for acquiring the land is virtually the same in terms of acquisition, appraisals and things of that sort. Pheasants Forever just has an ability to work with some private entities that the state doesn't have the ability to work.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, I'm familiar with the attitude of some of those landowners and have been sharp-tailed grouse hunting up in that area a lot of times. It sounds like Pheasants Forever essentially acts as a broker between the buyer and the ultimate purchaser and the seller. The state is buying. You've got landowners who are selling, and Pheasants Forever kind of helps make the transaction happen. Is of the 988, does all that go just for land acquisition, or is there a fee of some kind or something that, maybe it's just part of their mission and this is what they want to do, and so they just provide this service to the state, or is there some cut that they get as part of that?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Winkler, let's see. We have the accomplishment plan right here. And there is no cut per se. We're back to the direct and necessary for language. And there's 15,000 in personnel in this project. There's 890,500 in fee acquisition. And 50,000 that could go for various contracts to restore the land once it's acquired, before it's turned over to the state. Professional services costs are budgeted at $15,000, and land acquisition costs at $7,500, which would be paying for the services of the Department of Natural Resources, Bureau of Lands and Minerals.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, the takeaway is that they basically help facilitate the transaction as part of their mission, and they do it at this pretty de minimis cost.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clerk, at cost.
Yeah. Okay.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're backtracking, Mr. Becker, I'd like to go back to the item before that, 3C, and perhaps it's just that I don't understand all the terminology, but at the end of your notes, it says includes $926,000 in acquisition, but yet I don't see where that fits in to this particular item. Can you just kind of flesh that out for me a little?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Torkelson, the asterisk item that you're speaking of refers to the appropriation laws of Minnesota 2010, which is on page 13 and shown as a past appropriation. Some of the programs in prior years have had acquisition and restoration in one program, then subsequent years they split it out. This is a footnote to remind me that the prior year's appropriation FY11 was a combination restoration and acquisition program. So in FY11 we recommended to this program $1,791,000, $926,000 of which was acquisition, the balance was restoration.
I represent Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then, Mr. Becker, the money that's being spent in this current spending proposal is continuing to enhance land that was that was actually acquired in the previous round of spending. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representing Torkelson. No, that's not correct. At least it's not purposeful that would occur. We restore all land that we acquire. So built into the acquisition dollars are the dollars to restore it. This would be to enhance other forest land. There might by chance be something that was bought in the prior year that would fall into this enhancement program, but that would only be by chance, not on purpose.
Thank you.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Dalton. And Mr. Becker, going back to Representative Winkler's line of questioning, would you say then that it is a generalization, would be correct in saying that these groups, Pheasants Forever, Wild Turkey Federation, Ducks Unlimited, all those people who go in and facilitate these things, that their real gain in this is the fact that they help actually facilitate this and do something good for the environment and for a particular species, and that they really don't have a payback in this except that it reaches their long-term goals as an organization? Would that be a generalization that could be accepted as the normal?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Dill, I wish I had said that clearly and eloquently. Yeah, that's the case.
I don't know. I've got to think about this.
All right, then. Continue.
I'll start back up at 3F. Protect key forest habitat lands in Cass County, Phase 2. This is $604,000 to Cass County to acquire land and fee for forest wildlife habitat. And this is in general filling in checkerboard county ownership to improve habitat management. They'll acquire and fee 379 acres. And the leverage is $339,000 from Cass County. It addresses the council priority of the Northern Forest, number two, to protect forest land to prevent parcelization and fragmentation.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Someone told me that once this happened, then Cass County was could sell the lumber from this land. Is that part of the deal here?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, Cass County manages their lands for, it's a working forest, so there would be some land, timber that could be sold, sustainably managed. but sold. So it's a working forest.
Continue, please.
State Forest Acquisition 3G, $1,205,000, is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire land in fee and permanent management access easement for State Forest. This is concentrated, I believe, in the southeast Minnesota. They will acquire 415 acres in fee, 1 acre in easement, and their payment in lieu of tax liability is $7,092 a year. It addresses Northern Forest Priority Number 2, land to prevent parcelization fragmentation, and southeast forest priorities for fragmentation and protecting forest lands. Subdivision 4, wetlands. This bill has $15,827 for the Minnesota wetlands. 4A is the largest part of that, the Reinvest in Minnesota Wetland Reserve Acquisition and Restoration Program. This is phase 3 of this partnership between the Board of Water Soil Resources and the NRCS. $13 million is being appropriated for permanent conservation easements and to restore wetlands and associated upland habitat. The anticipated leverage on this particular project is $20,800,000 from the Wetland Reserve Program, and they have plans to ease 9,657 acres. 4B, Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetland Restoration and Enhancement Phase 3, is for $936,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to develop engineering designs for shallow lakes and wetlands and to restore and enhance shallow lakes. They will enhance 5,841 acres of shallow lakes when these designs are implemented. Item 4C, Shallow Lake Restoration Protection Wild Rice Lakes. This is another new program. It's $1,891,000 to the Natural Resources for an agreement with Ducks Unlimited and the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire wild rice lakeshore habitat in fee. The $1,891,000 will be divided as follows: $500,000 to the Department of Natural Resources, $1,100,000 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and $291,000 to Ducks Unlimited. They'll acquire in fee 150 acres, protect an easement 550 acres, and create a pilt liability of 3,750 acres. There's an anticipated leverage of $20,000 from Ducks Unlimited.
Mr. Becker, going back to 4B, the $936,000, under contracts, it says $924,000. What's entailed in a contract like that?
Mr. Chair, that would be engineering services, survey services, design services to design the basin management plan and the facilities necessary to manage the shallow lake basin.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, could we go back to 4A? Mr. Becker, is any of that land? Is any of that appropriation for the wetlands that were vetoed last year?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the way this program works is that they are in the process, as we speak, of soliciting candidates or applicants for this particular program. We won't know precisely which wetlands are being restored and which landowners are participating in the program. There were some restrictions on the vetoed money as well, as I recall, geographic restrictions. And these are not geographically restricted. So I would say there's no intent to use this money in lieu of the vetoed bonding money.
Do you have, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, was there
Representative Murphy.
Was there any criteria or statements in writing that will prove that this is not supplanting?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, our letter to the governor when we transmitted the recommendations indicated that we assume that the usual amount will be appropriated in bonding, whatever that might well be.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, that didn't work last time, did it? The usual amount was in bonding, and the usual amount was vetoed, and so now we're sitting with that amount of money that wasn't spent and the wetlands that weren't protected.
Representative Wiginius.
Representative Murphy asks a good question, but I want to follow up on it. After the veto, $10 million was put back in, and I think that went probably to the areas where there was restrictive language, so much of it was unrestricted. So much of the rest was unrestricted. So let me ask you two things. One, will this money only go to areas that were not on the restricted list, that didn't get funded by the $10 million? Is that what you're saying to us?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, what I'm saying to you is that there's a solicitation process, an application process. There's a set of criteria that guide the priorities among those applicants. The priority criteria drive this money toward the area of the state that was commonly known as the duck factory, which is not what was prioritized in the bonding bill, in my recollection. So the likelihood is that it will not go to the areas that were delineated in the bonding bill.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My memory serves, not all of that money was delineated. Some of it was just money. Some of it did go in areas which probably are in areas that are close to duck factories.
Mr. Becker?
Subdivision 5.
Sorry. I wanted to know if you wish to respond. We'll go to Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, 4C, again, I'm curious about this delineation of the appropriation, 500 to DNR, 1.1 to Bowser, and 291 to Ducks Unlimited. What is the reason for separating this out? Who does what here that for this project?
The Department of Natural Resources, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler. $500,000 to the Department of Natural Resources is for the land acquired in fee. The Board of Water and Soil Resources will handle the land acquired in easement. Ducks Unlimited will do engineering and easements as well.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part. What was the Ducks Unlimited role?
Engineering and easements as well, or assessment and easements as well.
And
assessment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. No, Mr. Becker. I heard the second time. But what is the difference between what Bowser is doing and what DU is doing,
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, it's the qualifications of the land that's being used.
So
they fit different programs. I'd have to take a look at the programs once again to give you the detail. Then we'll do that if you want.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Berger, I'm just trying to understand, when you lump it all in one appropriation then divide it out into three line items, it's not clear who's doing what and how it's set up. So it's at some point it'd be helpful, or as you're going through the rest of the presentation, to kind of have a sense of what each person is getting paid to do for their unique individual value.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker.
Representative Winkler, I'll do my best to do that. The structure of the appropriation is designed to have a coherent accomplishment plan or work program, if you might call it. They're all working on the same general project in the same general area. And so it doesn't make sense to manage them separately. So that's why these appropriations are drawn up this way from time to time.
Representative Dill.
Backing up to 3G, State Forest Acquisition, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker. Down it says Council Priority Northern Forest Fragmentation. With 415 acres, and you got locations in Wabasha, Houston, Fillmore, and Winona, and then you talk about the northern forest. How much fragmentation are you avoiding in this appropriation? Or how much fragmentation ends up being avoided? How much is consolidated? Do you have just a gunshot number that you can throw out there?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I don't know the answer to that question. In fact, it's a question that no one's ever asked until today, and I think it would be a good one to get back to program managers with and get the committee an answer if we can do it that way.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Well, the significance is that it's a massive problem when you have tribal, you have state, you have federal, you have county, township, school district, all these lands, and if really the net amount of it that you're doing was 200 acres out of the 415, and it saves fragmentation of 10,000 acres, that's really something. But if it only saves 200 acres of fragmentation, I wonder if it's worth it. So it would be nice to have a number on that. And I don't mean down to the acre. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't expect you to have that. But some kind of an idea what that might look like.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Becker.
Bill, we'll get back to the committee with something on that.
Thank you.
Order.
Representative Wagenius.
Back to the shallow lakes, 4C. You had noted before that 6% was kind of the average amount that we spent on personnel and that kind of thing. And I'm looking at this, and this is almost $250,000 out of $1.8 million. There's no restoration, no enhancement. It's just acquisition. That seems like a pretty stiff amount of money.
Mr. Beck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Genius. The $228,000 in personnel. $128,000 is for DU work, including programmatic work in terms of negotiating easements and things of that sort, and a land protection biologist to identify the land to protect. $100,000 is for negotiation in the field for Board of Water and Soil Resources, Soil and Water Conservation District, and actual support of the acquisitions themselves. $450,000 is for fee acquisition. $1,110,000 is for easement acquisition. $18,000 is for easement stewardship. $15,000 is in-state travel. $40,000 is professional services. And $30,000 is DNR land acquisition costs from the Lands and Minerals Bureau processing the acquisition. That should total the $1,891,000.
Representative Wagenius.
Proportionately to what we get, what's that? What are the costs then for $1.8 million? I mean, I can't do the math that quickly, but somebody here who has a calculator can.
About 15%.
15? So that's double of what other things. Okay, thank you.
I believe we were on Subdivision 5 Habitat.
Continue.
5A, Accelerated Aquatic Management Area Habitat Program. This is our third recommendation and appropriation for this particular project. The appropriation is for $6,500,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to buy interest in lands in fee or permanent conservation easements for aquatic management areas. The fee acquisition will be $450,000, the easement acquisition $609,000, and they will enhance 87 acres. Silt liability is $18,750. And the leverage is $5,040,000 in the value of donations from the USDA Mississippi River Basin Initiative. 5B, Coldwater Fish Habitat Enhancement Program, Phase 3 is $1,533,000 to Minnesota Trout Unlimited to enhance 81 acres of trout stream in Minnesota, throughout the state of Minnesota. TU and various federal monies will bring leverage of $180,000. This particular project is located in Winona, Goodhue, Nicollet Lake, St. Louis, Wabasha, and Olmsted counties. 5C is an addition to the Janet Johnson Memorial Wildlife Management Area at $577,000 to Chisago County to acquire land and fee to be added to the Janet Johnson Memorial Wildlife Management Area. 109 acres will be added. The silt liability incurred is $4,125 a year. It meets the LSOHC Metro Urbanizing Priority Number 1 to protect native prairie and Number 2 to provide habitat corridors. 5D Metro Big Rivers Habitat Phase 2, $5 million in the first year, is to acquire interests in land in fee or permanent conservation easement and restore, enhance natural systems associated with the Mississippi, Minnesota, and St. Croix Rivers. This is another one of the divided appropriations. $960,000 is to the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Trust Incorporated for acquisitions in the Valley Refuge. $150,000 is to Great River Greening for restoration and enhancement. $840,000 is to the Minnesota Land Trust for acquisition outside of the Wildlife Refuge Trust, or Wildlife Refuge, excuse me, and in the corridors of the river's name. $150,000 to the Friends of the Mississippi River for, I believe that's acquisition in the Mississippi River area. I want to go back to the $840,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust. That's for Valley Creek on the St. Croix watershed. And $2,900,000 is to the Trust for Public Land for land acquisition. Built liability created is $20,475. They will restore 41 acres, buy in fee 433 acres, buy in easement 300 acres, and enhance 130 acres. And it meets the Council Metropolitan Urbanizing Priorities, number one, to protect and enhance and restore native prairie, big woods, and oak savanna. Number two, to protect habitat corridors in Mississippi, Minnesota, St. Croix, and St. Croix Rivers. Number four, to protect and enhance riparian and littoral habitats. 5E, protecting sensitive shoreline in north central Minnesota, is $1,098,000. This money is to the Leech Lake Watershed Foundation and the Minnesota Land Trust as follows. $339,000 to the Leech Lake Watershed Foundation, $741,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust, and $18,000 to the Department of Natural Resources to pay acquisition-related expenses and monitoring costs of donated permanent conservation easements. This money is going primarily for personnel. It's nearly a 100% personnel program. The value that the state gets for this expenditure is donated lakeshore easements. The lakeshore is prioritized by the Department of Natural Resources and negotiated by the Watershed Foundation and the Land Trust. I want to point out one part of this appropriation. About two-thirds of the way down the line, that begins money appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for easement acquisition may be used to establish a monitoring and enforcement fund as approved in the accomplishment plan and subject to Subdivision 15. We'll get to Subdivision 15 later, which is a new subdivision, but the general idea here is to cover the management costs, stewardship costs, excuse me, of these easements in perpetuity through the creation of these accounts. 5F, restoring native habitat and water quality with Shell Rock River, is $2,577,000 to the Shell Rock
River. Mr. Becker, Representative Winkler had a question. I was deep in concentration over here. Sorry.
That's what it looked like, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, back to 5D, similar question to the Ducks Unlimited and Pheasants Forever. It's $5 million is appropriated to DNR, I think it says, for agreements to acquire interest in land. Who ultimately owns or holds the easements or the fee, whatever the case may be?
Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Trust, that fee land would be held by the federal government in the Valley Trust, or in the Valley. The Great River Greening is land and restoration and enhancement, so that is on currently protected land. The Minnesota Land Trust will hold the Valley Creek easements. The Friends of the Mississippi will hold any easements they are involved in. And the Trust for Public Land will be state land, is my recollection.
And Chair, Mr. Becker.
Representative Winkler.
Again, if you're ultimately having the state own it, what value does the Trust for Public Land bring?
Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Representative
Becker.
Winkler, working with the public. A talent in working with the public in land acquisition.
Okay, well, it seems just a little strange to me that we don't have any talent for working with the public, with our public agencies, but I'm sure they have more.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Winkler, there are unique circumstances to nearly every acquisition. In some cases, some entities are better positioned to carry through with the acquisition. And we try to get people to pick the acquisitions that they're best suited for and go forward with them. I think the other thing to add in response to that question is capacity. And the capacity to acquire land is limited in the state. And this adds to the capacity.
Continue, Mr. Becker.
We were on Shell Rock River, $2,577,000 to the Shell Lake Watershed District to acquire land and fee at the headwaters of the Shell Rock River for aquatic management area purposes. This is a second appropriation and is an appropriation that's part of a program to reclaim this watershed around the Albert Lee area. The acquisition is 257 acres in fee below the water control structure, and addresses a council priority Prairie 1, protect existing wetland upland complexes.
Representative Wiginius.
This is curious because here we have leases for gravel mining existing at the time may not be extended. So how long are the leases for gravel mining going to go on?
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I will have to check to make sure I get the right answer to you, but it's a limited period of time. My memory is 10 years, but I'm not sure that that's precise. So we'll get you the precise numbers.
Representative Wiginius.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, who is going to pay? I see the money is for acquisition and fee, and that's all it's for. Who is going to be restoring the gravel pits? is that part, is the responsibility of the person who's actually mining the gravel to restore it?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Agenius, yes, I believe that's the case.
So that is their obligation.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. I wondered what percent of the land is compromised by the gravel pit.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, I don't call that right offhand. Representative Green, we can get that number to you, though.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. Going back to the lease payments, I see they're going to be going to the legacy account, but they are given to Shell Rock River under a statute that says restore and enhance. Shell Rock is obviously going to be managing these into the future. Why aren't they getting part of the proceeds for management? Financially, this looks like something different than everything else.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenia, this is going into the AMA system, and the legislature can appropriate those proceeds out as needed to the individual that needs it.
Representative Wagenia.
My question remains, though, why aren't part of these dollars set aside? I know the Shell Rock area has a lot of problems. Why aren't part of these lease dollars not set aside for them for managing this piece of property?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Becker?
Representative Wiginius, that is permissible on the income during the period that the project's open. Once all the money has been expended, any remaining funds will have to be deposited with the state or a plan. This is under the contract with the Department of Natural Resources.
But Representative Wiginius?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But it says here that all gross income generated from mining operations must be transferred to the Commissioner of Management and Budget and credited to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. It says all.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius,
Mr. Becker.
I made a mistake. I was thinking of the standard contract that we have. The reason that this was done this way was that the council and the legislature can appropriate that money out as needed in the future.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. This just seems different from the pattern from everybody else. That's if the there is the mining stuff, so there is no other management that goes along other than the mine, the gravel pits themselves. So nothing else in this area needs to be restored or enhanced. Am I getting that? Is that the message I'm getting because no money is going to them?
Mr. Becker?
Representative Wiginius, I think that is the message. Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Green?
Thank you, Chair. I've heard that there's a dam above this property. Is that correct? And I guess I have some follow-ups if that's true.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, that dam is part of this project.
Ah, fantastic. So it's included.
It is being, Mr. Chair, Representative Green, it is being financed elsewhere, but it's included in the project scope.
Does that mean that...
Green.
Thank you. Does that mean that that the organization has negotiated with the dam to figure out, how much water is going to be coming through on a long-term basis? There's not going to be a change in the flow or anything unexpected, or is it out of our control?
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, the level of the lake is set by the state.
Okay. I just wondered if it's established, if it's a secure thing.
Quite secure.
Mr. Becker, we got to quit this Madam Chair stuff. I mean, it was bad enough yesterday when the governor called me Senator Magnus.
Mr. Chair, I can only say that that's a tribute to Chair Murphy, who sat in your chair before. And
the genteel spirit by which I
branded it into my mind.
Continue.
That was it. Thank you.
Speaking of, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, just not the labor, but it's kind of fun. Who has responsibility and control, then, of the water control structure?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I assume it's the district, but I'll check and make sure that's correct, and if it's different, I'll give a note back to you, the committee.
Thank you.
5G, outdoor
heritage.
Conservation Partners Grants Program. This is phase three of this particular statutorily defined program. It's $5,629,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a grants program to provide competitive matching grants of up to $400,000 to local, regional, state, and national organizations. The outcomes depend on the winning grant recipients. Grants are evaluated by resource professionals at the Department of Natural Resources. It's an open granting process. There's some features of this appropriation I'd like to point out. $319,000 of this appropriation may be spent for personnel costs and other administrative costs of this grant program at DNR. The program requires a match of at least 10% from non-state sources for grants of $100,000 or less, and a match of at least 15% from non-state sources for grants over $100,000. Up to one-third of the match may be in-kind resources. For grant applications of $25,000 or less, the Commissioner shall provide a separate, simplified application process. This is a new feature in this appropriation that is a result of issues in the public grant applicants about the size and length of the grant application developed by DNR. All projects must conform to the Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan. Wildlife habitat projects must also conform to the Minnesota Wildlife Action Plan. Subdivision 9, which is the project requirements, which we'll go through in a minute, applies to all the grants in this particular program. Subdivision 6. 6A is contract administration, $175,000 to the LCC to contract with the Commissioner of Natural Resources to be the fiscal agent on the pass-through grants. Or pass-through appropriations. 6B, LCC, is the council administration appropriation. 6C is the technical assistance panel, which was recommended requested at $84,000 and recommended by the council at $42,000. Subdivision 7 is availability of appropriations. Money appropriated in this section may not be spent on activities unless they are directly related to and necessary for a specific appropriation and are specified in the accomplishment plan. Must not be spent on indirect cost or institutional overhead. They're available for 3 years until June 30th, 2014 to get two full field seasons in. Funds for restoration and enhancement are available until June 30th, 2016 or 4 years after the acquisition, whichever is later. This is in order to ensure that restorations are complete when the land is finally, when the project is completed. And Subdivision 8, Accomplishment Plans, this is the legislative oversight tool, and that's the key to holding down administrative costs, so to speak. Subdivision 9, Project Requirements. A is a plant or vegetation or so seed, only if the types native to Minnesota. C is all conservation easements, the terms of the conservation easements. They must be permanent. Specify the parties, specify the provisions, specify the habitat types and location being protected. Retain water on the land as long as possible, and specify the responsibility of the parties for habitat enhancement and restoration, and include a long-term stewardship plan. D is for all restorations. The recipient must prepare and retain an ecological restoration and management plan that, to the degree practicable, is consistent with current conservation science. E, for new lands required, the recipient must prepare a restoration and management plan, including identification of sufficient funding for implementation. F is the recipient must provide the council with documentation of the process used to select parcels acquired in fee or as a permanent conservation easement, related transaction costs, including but not limited to appraisals, legal fees, recording fees, commissions, and other similar costs and donation must be included. Item G in this particular list is all restoration and enhancement projects funded with money appropriated under this section must be on land permanently protected. H is to provide the council and the commissioner of management and budget an analysis of increased operations and maintenance costs likely to be incurred by public entities. I is must give consideration and make timely written contact with the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. Subdivision 10 is payment conditions and capital equipment expenditures. These grants or pass-through appropriations are administered on a reimbursement basis, and any capital equipment expenditures in excess of $10,000 must be itemized in and approved as part of the accomplishment plan. Subdivision 11 is recyclable materials. Subdivision 12 is accessibility. Subdivision 13 is the land acquisition restrictions. And the important thing here is the land must be used in perpetuity for the purpose for which the appropriation was made. Property subject to this subdivision may not be altered from the intended use of the interest in the real property or convey any interest in the real property prior to the appropriation. Subdivision 14 is the real property interest report, and the holder of the property must submit an annual report on the status of the real property, attesting that it is still being used as intended and hasn't been conveyed. Subdivision 15, monitoring and enforcement requirements. This is new in this bill. It's authority to use the money for monitoring and stewardship of conservation easements. It's to provide a perpetual stream of money to cover those costs, and includes a clawback in specific conditions of the money deposited in the fund. Successor organizations is a subdivision that's in case of organization dissolution. Section 3 is a definition of recipient, clarifying that that's the entity responsible for deliverables as opposed to some other entity. Subdivision Section 4 redefines in legislative terms to be at the pleasure of the appointing authority and provide continuity of legislative appointments by having them serve until replaced.
Time out. Representative Winkler has a question.
Mr. Chair, this is actually for you. Section 4 deals with the makeup of a council and how it's appointed. Can you give, and I probably missed this, but we'll have amendments on Tuesday. But where is this bill going? What is the path it has to travel? I would say this makes it a great candidate for the Government Operations Committee.
Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, I think if you get a chance before we come back on Tuesday, if not now, to look it over, I think we're just clarifying what really is the situation here. I think that would be safe to say that it's a situation, if you read and go through it all, it says it one way about three times and says it a different way one time. And I think the intent is being met by the clarification. So if you get a chance to look through it, I think it makes sense, and I think it's consistent. I don't know if I need to repeat that anymore or stumble anymore. But if you've got, I stand for questions. If you think we're changing something, I think it's more clarification and making it consistent here.
I'll look through it more carefully. Representative McNamara.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Winkler, if you, have particular questions on this, we can talk with Representative Pepin, Representative McNamara, try to make sure everything's worked out before Tuesday.
Mr. Chair, if it's a change, it should go to Representative Pepe's committee. It's not my understanding that that's what we were doing here.
Okay,
it's
we'll make clarification
of what the intent was, and I believe it would be consistent with that.
Okay. Continue on the roll that we are on.
And Section 5 is the last section in the bill. It clarifies an appropriation from laws of 2009, Chapter 172, amending that old appropriation to allow money to be spent for long-term stewardship, which was the intent of the original request, and it adds no cost to the bill. And, Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Well, thank you very much. Do you have any final words today, Representative McNamara, before I close her up?
No, Mr. Chair, we're ready. We'll be back Tuesday with the bill before us, and we look forward to further discussion and potential amendments.
So thank you. We will then on Tuesday be prepared to process the bill, have whatever amendments you wish in order. If there are members of the audience who wish to speak to this, we'll start out again with questions if you still have some. If members of the audience wish to take part at that time, you may do so. Even though it's not going to be mandatory, it would be nice if you'd let us know in the next couple of days that you plan on testifying before us. So with that, this case is closed.